Welcome to Crappy Friends, the podcast that discusses female friendship, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Girl power defeating bitchery since 2018.
I'm New York Times bestselling author Kristen Higgins.
And I'm USA Today bestselling author Joss Day. And we're best friends. That welcome was really perky.
The energy flowing between us, even though we're 200 miles apart.
We're zooming, as everyone has been doing.
We're making the best of our friendship and the podcast.
Right. It's tough. I mean, maybe we should talk a little bit too today about Zoom fatigue. I have
Zoom. That's a good idea. Okay. In fact, let's talk about boundaries today.
Yeah.
We were just talking, you know, in our pre-recording chit-chat about how in this time of COVID, when so many of us are working from home and doing Zoom meetings and texting and, you know, giving out our phone numbers, that suddenly our workmates are with us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's texting, group texts.
Yes. And you want to be supportive. I'm in the boat right now. And you want to be supportive. And I feel like if we were in a live setting, I would be. But the constant buzzing from my devices is making me...
Dings of email, text.
Yes. The calendar reminders that you have another Zoom meeting. Here you go.
A calendar reminder.
Oh my God.
I was talking with my agent today and she was mourning the loss of the office.
Yeah.
Because she's been home since the middle of March and her employees have been home. And she said, you know, it's not the same to wander into a meeting and say, you know, based on what you said, that triggered a thought of what I said.
Absolutely.
Is not the same. You know, there's 100% lost from being in three-dimensional person, you know?
100% agree. I was talking about this with a colleague. We took 10 minutes to bitch about Zooming and then we got on with working. But one of the things she mentioned is, you know, oftentimes, like, we are Zooming all day, every day. There are some days where I'm not eating lunch till 2 and 3 because I can't get off the computer. That never happened in, you know, real life. And we're just, I think what's missing is when you're at work, you have your little hallway meetings. Oh, here's Melissa. Let me just ask her this quickly. Then we're on the same page. And when we go to the big meeting, it's all good. And we don't have that anymore. Yeah. And so it's been really difficult carving out alone time, which you know I need. And maintaining boundaries, which are so easy to do when you had a physical structure to go to.
Right. Once you were home, you were home. And I mean, I know a lot of us work at all hours of the day. You can check your work email and decide, you know what, it's 7:30 at night, but I can take care of this and not have it on my plate tomorrow.
Right.
Choice. And I think the Zoom fatigue is a very real thing because, you know, it's wonderful that we have it. It's fantastic. You know, we're able to see each other and chat and we don't just have to rely on, you know, standing in each other's driveways or whatever with our masks on. But I find that it takes energy.
Yes.
It doesn't give it. Whereas like in person, it's much more invigorating for me, I'm the extrovert of our pair.
Yeah.
But I was talking to someone about my virtual book tour. And I, you know, I absolutely would not want anyone to risk their health to come see me in a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to do all these virtual events. And if you're interested, listeners, they're all on my website. KristenHiggins.com under appearances. But there's a real thrill to walking into a room full of readers who want to hear from
me. Yeah, absolutely.
Faces and recognizing some of the regulars maybe, or seeing like a couple times I've had friends from college or high school pop in just sort of unexpectedly. And that doesn't happen with the Zoom meetings and stuff. I mean, it's, well, I was just doing something with the wonderful Kennedy Ryan on Instagram Live, and we're seeing all our friends' names come up, and it was just really, really wonderful, but it's not the same. There and Chris in person, you know.
Yeah, there's an energy that's really missing.
Yeah.
From seeing people in the flesh, from being, you know, part of a group with, you know, like-minded purpose. And yeah, it's tough. I'm struggling. I'm also struggling because I really miss the structure that going to a 9-to-5 gives me, which I didn't realize I needed so badly. So I eat like hell. We all are, right?
Yeah. I've basically been eating ice cream and pasta.
That's it. And wine and coffee. That's my whole diet. but going to work, I would fix myself a nice green smoothie. I had a nice salad for lunch. And then I had plans for dinner. I always had something planned to cook for dinner. So I was much more regimented about eating.
That's where your work friendships blossom too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down at the salad bar, you know, or let's take a walk at lunch hour.
Exactly.
So I think with friendship too, like one thing that I've found, Joss, is I'm kind of neglecting certain friends because I have nothing to say, you know?
Yeah.
I was thinking like, oh, I should give Teresa a call, and I haven't talked to her for a while. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to say, hey, how are you? Nothing. How about you? Nothing. Okay. You know, like I feel like it's almost pointless to have a conversation because I have nothing to report. Maybe I could talk about the books that I'm reading or the shows that I've watched. But other than that, it's like, no, same as it was last month and the month before and the month before.
Oh, that's so tough, right? That's the worst part.
So I feel like a neglectful friend.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get like I actually had a really fun email exchange with one of our mutual friends, Joss, Mara of the,
yes.
I had a dream about her.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to relay the dream. But like, other than that, I had nothing to say. Like, well, it's, you know, sunny out. And I just feel like the most boring person.
Yeah. Even with Mara though, cause I find when I have my conversations with her, they last, as you know, 3 hours.
But she's the one to go to. If you want to like have a marathon, tell you any, she can tell her anything. It's like starting from my first memory on, and she is so attentive and interested and like big hearted. She's fantastic, you know?
Yeah. So when you feel like a chat, you call her up and we talk about everything. But what I find difficult about our chats these days is I'm so bored with everything. Like I don't even turn on the TV anymore because I don't care to watch anything.
Yeah.
Even the things that are supposed to be good, I'm just like, I feel very whatever about it.
It's so funny because I used to say, all I need is like a month where there's nothing on my calendar.
Right.
And now I've had months of that. And, you know, with the occasional, very occasional, like Zoom meeting or something like that. Now I have more stuff with my book being released on June 9th, but I had nothing after nothing after nothing. And also I was alone up here on Cape Cod. And so all those fantasies about like, I just want to lie on the couch and watch Ozark, you know, with Jason Bateman, our boyfriend.
Yes.
Those are filled really, really quickly. You know, you get really tired of that. And, you know, yes, you can work from home, but it really makes you think about down the road, you know, like when we retire or something, what are we going to do? And how's it going to look? You know, I just want to be able to read as much as I want to. That lasts, you know, a few weeks. And then you're like, I want to be purposeful. I want to do something.
I mean, it's been great because I think it showed everyone that you really have a plan.
Yeah.
For when you retire, you really have to figure out what it is you're going to do after you stop working. Work does give you so much structure. I sleep differently. I eat differently. Everything is different.
And it's structure, the compartmentalization.
Yes, which I am struggling with now just because I'm on a group text from my work colleagues, which if anyone knows me, you know that I do not like to be part of a group text. I cannot stand the group text unless it's informative. You know, we're all meeting in New York at a certain place and here's the address, everyone, boom. And then we're done. I don't want to hear anything else from you. But, I can't get out of the group text because everyone has different devices. So I'm stuck in the group text unless I tell people, please take me out of the group text. And then they'll be completely offended and I'll be this hateful person.
And I know. It's so hard to ask to be removed from a group text. And this is like another thing about boundaries and, you know, communication, I think, is a big part of that. And we talked in our initial episode about communication preferences with a friend who didn't respect her. So we talked about like how she would text whenever a thought crossed her mind. And at the time my kids were little and in grammar school, and the only people who texted me were, you know, the nurse's office. And so I would get this like jolt of panic every time my phone buzzed. And, you know, I don't like to be in group texts either, because it might be a question of like, does anyone know someone who has a ladder I can borrow? And right. You send it out to your 10 closest friends in town and 10 people respond. No, yes, no, I do, but I can't bring it over, but my son can bring it later. And, oh, I had one, but I think it's broken, you know? And I think, you know, don't do that.
It's just my worst nightmare. Oh my God, it is. It's my worst nightmare because the phone never stops buzzing. It never stops buzzing. Just
are we just crotchety? And
I mean, I think that's certainly part of it. I've always been kind of like, I don't like the group text. I feel like once the point of the group text, once that's been met,
right? Like we're meeting at 7 tonight. See you then.
Then there's no need to
see you then.
Yes.
Wait. Looking forward to it. You know,
fun avatar. Kissy face. LOL.
Avatar. Avatar. Yeah. Avatar.
Yes. I just can't. But that could be a function of me being old. It certainly could, because
yeah. Well, I'm older than you, so maybe it's both of us. Oh, but it's important when you get close to someone to say, like, I prefer that you don't text me between, you know, 8 and 4 when I'm working, or, you know, 7 and 7 when I'm on a shift. Or like I have said, I still prefer email. I am real old school and I like to talk with my fingertips, and I don't enjoy texting. I also voice dictate a lot. So then I have to fix the autocorrect and curse at the phone. So just the act of communicating is fraught with aggravation for me. So I think it's important to set a boundary early, like, you know, if you need to reach me, please email me. I'm really not great at texting. Or I always have my phone with me. If you need me, just text me.
Right.
Or I would prefer to speak in person on the phone or face to face. It's okay to say that.
Right.
And you don't want to diminish your friendship with aggravation.
Right.
So out there, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that completely. I would also say just a little texting etiquette from old crotchety me. If you are, and this is also instant messaging etiquette, is say what you need to say in a single text.
Bubble, yeah.
Right. Don't like text, 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 return. Text, 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 return. Text, so because the phone beeps unnecessarily.
Yes.
I don't know what that's called, but stop it.
I know. So I was thinking, ding, maybe we should get together. Ding, tonight. Question mark, ding.
Yes.
You know, right. I hear you. I often too, like as a response to that, I will often silence my phone and then I might miss things that I want to hear. So that's why my close friends know, use texting in moderation.
Right.
And, also I have this one friend and she texts a lot and she thinks that I'm Google. So she'll say like, do you have that plumber's number? And I just don't reply. You know what? I know that you know how to find that plumber's number. You know, actually, I was out kayaking the other day and I got that exact text. And when I came back to shore, it was like, I'm sorry, I Googled it. We're old and good friends and she knows what's up. I think another thing that we need to have boundaries on in friendships, not in the time of COVID, but just always, is off-limit topics.
Ooh.
if there are things you don't want to talk about,
right,
that are, you know, potentially more sensitive to you than they might be to the general public, or, you know, things, I don't know, I don't want to talk about, you know, when I went to boarding school, but just right. like really miserable couple of years, and I don't want to delve into it or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't go to boarding school. Joss did. And I don't think it was miserable, but
it was fine.
Yeah. Things that aren't always comfortable to talk about.
Yeah. Like maybe you just broke up with someone and it was really hard and you went through all the feelings and your friends were there for you and you just don't want to keep bringing it up over and over again. Sometimes people love to rehash that kind of kind of conversation.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes you're kind of done with that. Don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. And like I would say in that situation, let the wounded party bring it up. If she needs to talk about it, she needs to talk about it. And that's part of being a good friend. If she's told you that story, 10 times about what a slime her spouse was, you could say, oh yes, you've told me that.
Mm-hmm.
I know the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, kind of 10 times I think is enough to hear the story.
Yes.
I have a friend who'll say like, yes, but I'm going to tell you it again because there's an addendum, right? Okay. If I have time for it, I have time for it. If I don't.
I like the addendum. I do like that though.
but I think that, say you're talking about the Me Too movement or right. brutality, you know, things that are in the news. And someone just says like, look, my cousin was shot by a policeman. I don't want to talk about it.
Right. Right.
You know, that's, it's so much better to say that.
Yeah.
And if they're in a state of anxiety and upset and then tell people 3 weeks later, you guys didn't know my cousin was shot, but you know, right. because that's not fair.
Right. No, exactly.
They would feel horrible.
Right.
If that were the case. You know, there are things, you know, that have happened to me in my past that were traumatic and I don't want to talk about them anymore. You know, I have a therapist and that's right. what she's for, you know,
right.
I don't talk about it, over drinks when I want to have fun, you know?
Right. Right.
So I think that the responsibility in that situation is for the person with the sensitivity.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't want to talk about child molesters. You guys know why.
Yeah.
Or politics, you know, or money or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
My beloved mother-in-law, who is the world's best mother-in-law, you know right. that. She likes to call me up and complain about the state of the world. And we agree on everything.
Right.
So I say, Polly, you know, I just don't. You know, we're on the same team and I don't want to rehash it. And, I just don't have the energy for it.
Right. It's exhausting. I have a colleague at work who I like very much and she'll, you know, be in a Zoom meeting and we'll have some other person make some statement that's her usual horrible narcissistic thing. And then my phone will ring after the meeting. I know exactly who it is. Right. And she'll go on and on and on about it. And it's the same thing. You're right. I know you're right. I believe you. I agree with you. But I can't sit in this loop with you anymore. It's just too tiring.
I have said to my mother-in-law, you know, who'd be a good person for you to talk about this with is my mother. You know, like, again, they have very similar beliefs and they can talk and you know, encourage each other and shore each other up and that sort of thing. I am happy to talk about gardening with my mother-in-law, my children, her beloved grandchildren, you know, family in Ireland and stuff, but I just don't, you know. So I tell her and she's fine with it.
But that's the nice response. That's the good
one. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to another area of making boundaries, because we talk about setting good boundaries all the time, Joss, you know, like what does that mean? Family is another place where you might want to have boundaries.
Yes, of course.
Maybe your family time is sacred to you.
Yes.
So Sunday is reserved for dinner at your grandma's and that's it. And you don't want to bring a friend. You don't want to be invited to a brunch. It's grandma's day, or, you know, after seven, when my kids were little and they'd go to bed at like 6:30, I am available for parenting advice. Just FYI, if you want someone who sleep for 12 hours. but you know, that was my time with my husband, who was then working two jobs, and I worked a few nights a week. So there, I didn't want to talk to anybody.
Right.
My kids were asleep. It was husband time, you know, and it might mean that we were, you know, playing cards or something, but that was our time together. And, I wouldn't answer the phone, you know, if I got a call. It's like, it's, you know,
it's a long time.
You can wait.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think too, some people are very, protective of their families, like friends over here, families here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do that, but it's easy to blur those boundaries as well. I mean, if you want to, I don't know that you have to have such hard lines in that respect.
Yeah.
For me, the hard line comes with work, because usually if I'm out with work friends, they're only talking about work and you never get a break from that.
Yeah.
But I think the family and friend line, most people blur it a lot. Some.
I think so. And, you know, I think that it might be a little weird to be good friends with someone and never meet their family.
Yeah.
But I know we've had at least three letters where we've said, like, she used to be my friend and now she's my sister's friend.
Right.
Friend or something like that.
Right.
There's that attitude of you're my friend, I own you, you know?
Right.
First, and therefore your loyalty is supposed to be to me.
Yes.
I'm supposed to be able to bitch about my sister to you, not have you be her friend too.
Right.
And that's, you know, problems arise there. So I would say, like, if you have a sister who made your life a living hell and constantly undermines your whatever makes you feel small and horrible, then you need to tell your friend about that.
Yeah, I agree.
And say, like, we are going on this picnic with my family. I just want to give you a heads up that my relationship with my sister is strained.
Yes.
And, you know, we have not gotten along really ever, you know, and give her a little context or something. Right. But again, like, I think it's your job, person who has the issue, to state it. If it's going to be a problem for your friend to say, oh my God, your sister was so funny and great, and oh, you know, what a story about her and the shark, then you're going to be mad about that.
Yeah. That's the issue that I was thinking of, is you can say to your friend, my sister and I don't really get along, and, you know, we're going to go to this family thing, and I just want to give you a heads up that this is the issue between us. And then all of a sudden your friend gets along swimmingly with your sister and you're like, what in the world? What's going on? You have to be open enough to allow that. Your dynamic with your family is not going to be the same dynamic that your friend is going to have with your family.
And if it's going to be hurtful to you that your friend is going to find your sister charming and everything,
right,
don't be your friend.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you, like, everybody likes Emma better than they like me, then that's your issue.
Right.
Get a therapist, you know,
yes,
and work it out with Emma if that's an option. But don't set your friend up.
Right.
You know? Okay. And I have a friend who said she's afraid to introduce me to her sister because she thinks I'll like her sister better. And she's like, she's really charming. And from what I know from my friend is that she's, you know, she's not like a super mentally healthy person.
Okay.
And however, my friend and I have been friends for years, and I feel like, you know, she should give me the benefit of the doubt. I could go to her mom's funeral and not get swept away with her sister's charm and drop my original friend for her, you know?
Right.
I think, you know, you have to give your friend some credit there.
I would go
to your mom's funeral and be there for you.
Right.
Worrying that I'm going to dump you for your sister. That just seems very...
Because certainly you can recognize someone who is charming, which may masquerade a little narcissism. And you could see how the relationship between the family members don't work, but they might work with other people. Mm-hmm. I think you just have to be a little more self-aware about yourself and aware about the issue that's going on.
Also, you know, like, families are so fraught, right? Your insecurities go back to when you were 6 months old, you know, and or maybe the day you came home from the hospital, who knows? but if it's going to be such a problem, you're so worried about it, I think you have to look at yourself and say, like, why am I so afraid that Kristen would dump me for my sister after meeting her once at mom's funeral?
Yeah. Okay.
You know? You know, if you think, like, this is just too much of a tarry mess, I don't want to get my friend involved with, so I won't. That's different, you know, save you some trauma, whatever. But be clear on where you stand, I guess is what we're saying. This is what boundaries are really about, I think, is clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Agreed. And,
you know, as you were saying, the work friends, you know, you spend most of your day with these people. They can feel so close. And I have a friend, one of my best friends I made at my very first job out of college. Hello, Heidi.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my other very dear friends, I wouldn't call her a best friend, but Joanne was from my last job. Now, Joanne and I will get together maybe once a year for dinner, and we'll catch up on the family and kids, and her kids are, you know, probably her son is maybe 15 years younger than my son. But what we end up talking about is work from way back when.
Wow. You know,
dynamics, the people, the characters. Remember when? And
right.
I always wish, like, we had turned left when we turned right there as a company or whatever. But I mean, I really like this woman. She's intelligent, mm-hmm. bright and funny and entertaining. And she's so excited about my career as a writer. But the truth of the matter is we were work friends.
Right.
And we liked each other. And we both loved working for that company enough that it has carried us through.
Right.
That, you know, I knew, I went to her wedding. I you know, she brought a present when my kids were born. I brought a kid, present when her kid was born. So, you know, it's not to say that you can't have a work friend become a dear friend. Heidi and I, who met at my first job, we never talk about work.
Right.
You know? That was 25 years ago, you know, and our friendship has really blossomed and grown so that there's so much else to talk about.
Yeah. I think
Joe and I, we only talk about work.
Right.
So, you know, you can do it, but you have to be aware of what binds you.
Yeah. I agreed. And vet the friend the way you normally would vet anyone else. I mean, if you see you have this connection because, you know, this bitch at work is so horrible and you could go on and on for hours about how horrible she is together, that's probably not going to be the glue that keeps your friendship together. So, you know, make sure that you are able to vet the friendship based on what you're doing, how you guys are interacting with each other on the job. If it's more work-based, then maybe she's just a work friend.
And those are wonderful to have.
It's perfectly fine, right?
You know,
perfectly fine.
But I think, too, like, if you want the friendship to grow beyond the work hours and the work issues, then you have to start doing something other than complaining about your boss or coworker or project.
Right.
You know, go to a movie and talk about that. Back when you could go to movies, or, you know,
right.
read a book together and discuss it and see if you loved talking about that, and then start to introduce the personal.
Right. Right.
You know, if you think, like, wow, I really loved talking about that book with Betty, you know, maybe I'll tell her a little bit about, how my mother left when I was three and I've never seen her again since, you know?
Right. Right. That's the way to sort of let it organically grow, kind of blossom that way. I know I have a nurse friend who her nurse colleagues all do fun things once a month, like something really big and outrageous once a month. Like, they go ziplining, which I think is the coolest thing ever. But they have become friends now. And you can see how that would naturally sort of take place. They have these weird hours, as nurses do. And then once a month, they do these incredible activities that sort of bonds them together, which is really lovely.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. And I would also say, like, if that's not you, you can sit that out. Ziplining's not really me, but you guys have a great time, and I will want to see the pictures on Monday, you know?
Right.
And then I think another boundary that is, I think, more difficult to define is, what do you expect when you get together? And I'm thinking of that letter we got from the lovely Italian woman.
Mm-hmm.
They were friends because they watched a show together.
Oh, right. That's right.
They were in this chat group about how fabulous this show was. And then they met up in the city of great food. She didn't name it, but I think it was New Orleans.
Yes.
But, and she said, like, it was a different person. And
right.
The friend just, like, wanted to drink and watch reruns of the show, right?
Yeah.
They had both traveled a distance, and her expectation of how the friendship would be in person was so different from what the reality was.
Right.
In that situation, I don't know that there was a way to figure that out beforehand. They lived in different countries.
Right.
And I remember our advice to her was give your friend a pass, go back to being email friends.
Right.
Virtual friends. And just realized she's not going to be your travel buddy.
Right.
Wrote back to us and said, you know, they both kind of confessed, like, that wasn't great, but I still love you. And, you know, and they just went back to what it was before. I've had friends where we've gone away for the weekend, and my friend would just, like, text her daughters. And I'd be like, you know, over here, back over here, we're having fun here, you know, or I'm waiting for you. We're going to go out for dinner, and you're busy telling your kids where their socks are or something.
Right.
And my expectation is, like, if we plan for this weekend and your children are in their 20s, they should be able to find their own socks.
Right.
Now, I mean, that's my judgment.
Right.
Judging her children on their sock finding ability, and, you know, but I also feel like, look, we're here together.
Yeah.
The first time it happened, I was like, okay, so now I know what to expect. The second time it happened, I said, phones away.
Right.
Let's talk. Let's connect. Let's, you know, talk the way we have before, because that's why I'm here. That's why we cleared our schedules and got on a plane to meet here. You know, I think it was better to say it out loud.
No, I agree. I think,
like, geez, you know, your kids are stupid.
I mean, I think that'd be kind of awesome. It's kind of, you know, I completely aside, I'm dying to write a character who, like, says the wrong thing always, the inappropriate thing, the mean thing. Like, oh, what an ugly baby. Never mind. That's completely.
We had that letter writer too. The one who was hurting. I think she lost her mom.
She lost her boyfriend broke up with her, and
sock.
Yeah,
that was the way she signed her letter. Dirty sock.
That's right.
I loved her though.
So did I.
She wanted to tell her friends she was the black one, and, like, someone was Asian, and she's like, yeah. "You're racist.
You're,
like,
all racist, and your baby's
ugly. Boy, I'm going to sleep with your husband, and you have an ugly baby."
Awesome.
There's a freedom in being unfiltered. Right. One of my friends is completely unfiltered. And, you know, we can't have boundaries because she just, like, stomps all over them. And this is Carol. You've met Carol.
Oh, I love Carol so much.
Someone who says things like, is it wrong for me to find your son so hot?
Yes, Carol. Yes.
She calls her Nana. You know, she's like his grandmother. I'm like, yes, it is wrong. And, you know, it's like, you know, please don't let Nana talk about how good looking she finds me. And I'm like, sorry, that's your Nana.
Love Carol so much. She makes me so happy
being
around her, because she is just so, it just comes out. It just flows. There's no filter. There's no, let me stop and think.
No, no.
And I love that. What I love about that.
If she was our mother, it would be a different story.
Well, that's a different dynamic. That's a completely different dynamic.
We can enjoy her because she's not our mom.
Right. But there's comfort in that kind of reliability. That you know she's just going to say whatever comes into her head.
Right, right. And there's a refreshing aspect of it, you know? It's like, call it like it is. Yeah. I'm looking at the wrong piece of paper here. It sucks. Violent tendencies. Okay, that's not for us, but that's a boundary. If your friend beats you up,
stop.
Yeah, break up with them. And that's, you know, I'm not joking. That is definitely a boundary, is some physicality, right? And especially violence. But, you know, if your friend makes you uncomfortable by not respecting your physical boundaries, and we've had that friend too, Jess, that's just wrong. That's a sign of disrespect. And like, I don't care what you want. What I want matters more.
Right.
So rub my shoulders. Come on, rub my shoulders. Or let me rub your shoulders, you know?
Let me put my feet in your lap.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all have different relationships with our space, our bodies. I would say that you and I usually give each other a hug when we see each other. Mm-hmm. And that's enough.
Plenty.
Right. And if we don't hug, that's okay too, right?
Fine.
But I don't want a friend.
He's still there.
Yeah. I don't want a friend who's going to sit on my lap or like walk in while I'm showering and chat with me. That's, I'm a repressed Yankee from New England. Please. We both are.
I'm too much of a prude for all of that. I don't, yeah.
Yeah. And someone saying like, well, I don't mind seeing you naked. I don't mind. Yeah.
Which is why, no, I'm not going to tell the story. I'm sorry. I can't. I may have revealed it in an embarrassing personal problem, but I can't. All right, I'll tell it. So just very quickly.
Pretend you're not going to tell a story. Yeah. Go ahead.
Very quickly. So I had a surgery many years ago on my knee. And of course, you know, I'm allergic to morphine and all the rest. And it made me very constipated. And I was in a rehab center for a little while. And one of the nurses there, Nurse Steve.
Oh, Nurse Steve. Yes.
Nurse Steve was gorgeous. Nurse Steve was smoking hot gorgeous. And I was really super extra special, fabulous, constipated, man. It'd been days. Like days, man, days.
Yeah, opioid painkillers.
Yeah. And so Nurse Steve had to give me an anal suppository. Don't do that. Kristen nearly choked on her wine, y'all.
I just took a sip, just as she said the word anal.
And I also had my period, so I had a tampon.
Oh my God.
Right. So it was horrible. So I had friends at the rehab center who were physical therapists and occupational therapists. And I'm telling this story about how totally, totally embarrassed I was. And she was like, oh my God, Nurse Steve doesn't care. He's a nurse. And I was like, dude, I care. Who cares about a nurse? I care.
Right. I care. I mean, it's obviously scarred you emotionally.
And for life. For life.
He doesn't even remember you. Right? It doesn't matter. I remember, when my husband tried to kill me, he loves when I say that. When he moved a plank from the porch right in front of the door, so I stepped out on the porch into nothing, and then thought I broke my femur. Mm-hmm. It was so hideous; my leg was completely deformed. I mean, it was sick, and all the nurses and doctors were coming in to see it because it was so freaky. and I had my period, of course, mm-hmm. And I had to go to the bathroom because they fill you with fluids because they're thinking we're going to have to fix this surgically because look at this mangled leg, you know, right. My leg was crooked in a way that legs shouldn't be. I didn't break my femur. Although radiologists like refused to believe that. So they twisted and turned me. I had torn soft tissue and had this feeling, but so they're filling me with saline solution so that I can go up to surgery. And of course that's just like, you know, I had to go to the bathroom so badly. And so I'm like, I'm going to have to go to the bathroom pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So find me crutches, honey. My husband was so guilty, as he should have been. Because I had to ride in the ambulance and everything. And then the nurse, I'm like, can you get me some crutches? And she's like, oh, you're not putting weight on that leg. That leg is broken. And I'm like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom really bad. And I can hop. Okay. My husband can carry me.
Yeah.
Go to the bathroom. And she's like, nope, you're not getting out of this bed. Here's a bedpan. And I'm like, no, I don't have to go that badly. Nope. An hour later, I was like, give me the bedpan. I'll do it. And I said to her, look, I have my period. It's the second day. It's like, you know,
a crime scene
down there.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I've seen everything. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Four people in the room.
Yeah.
Trying to pee into a bedpan.
Yeah. It's too much. I've done that with, well, you know how they have the teaching, the students all trump into your room.
Oh, yeah.
And 10 people standing around my bed. Slowly, like, I was like, oh, you're here, as I remove the bedpan from underneath me.
Gives them right for walking in, right?
Walk in, man.
I just think they should at least say, like, is this a good time? You know, is this a good time for the residents to come look at you? Yeah, if I could have bitten someone, I would have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that we have wandered off course. This is what happens with the cheap Chardonnay. But, you know, I guess we're getting back to the topic of our podcast today is boundaries. And, yeah. And you know, to be aware of what areas of your life need boundaries.
Right.
And to be able to vocalize those, you know, to your friend and say, you know, this, I would rather you reach me by this method. I would rather not talk about this subject, you know, and, you know, you don't have to hand them a list the day that you first meet up for coffee, but,
no.
But if you don't make them clear, then there's a good chance that they will be stepped on. And if that's really going to bother you, then you need to say it like it is and not let your friend walk into a trap, really.
I have a wine delivery here right now.
Oh.
Can I just run and get my wine?
No.
He's right outside. I'll be right back. I'll be fast.
Cue the damn music.
Thanks for listening to Crappy Friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Crappy Friends and consider leaving us a review. Email us your friend stories at theladies@crappyfriends.net. I'm Kristen Higgins.
And I'm Just A.
And we're best friends
forever.